Rosalie DeMaios Rothman taught creative writing and myth and literature and founded the Myth Folklore Studies Center at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. As many of you know, she co-edited a prize-winning anthology, Life on the Line, is the author of several books, Going to Bed Whole, Tottering Palaces, The Approximate Message, and others. And she's read her poems in a lot of different places, Greece, Mexico, Spain, the Czech Republic, and was even featured on the BBC, which I think is very cool. She has an unbelievably amazing book coming out this fall, and it's going to be a big launch to celebrate this book. And the title of the book is I Want to Thank My Eyes, and it is being published by Tebbutt Bach in California, and a wonderful publisher. And so you're getting just a preview tonight, and it's just great to introduce my good friend, Rosalie DeMaios Rothman.
Are you going to sit?
And I'm going to stand, and I'm going to carry on.
Hey.
Yes.
And you're going to put your clip mouth right up here,
yeah,
close to the
microphone.
Yeah,
we're going to do that. I'm going to try. Whoa. Good evening. I want to thank you all for coming to hear the three poets. And it's really a privilege to be reading with Deborah and with Ellen, whom I have known for a long time. And I want to thank, we can't do it enough, although I was told, don't talk, read the poems. I'm going to do that, mostly. I want to thank again Jimmy and Joan for the many poetry blessings they lay on our heads in the poetry community and in just everywhere in Pittsburgh, because this is something that belongs to everyone. And so tonight I'm going to... And I want to welcome this room full as well of new faces. I've been watching you. You know, when you're at a poetry reading, I almost said I wouldn't talk, everything becomes part of a painting. It's really beautiful. Don't you think so? You're looking out and the faces become parts of the poem. So, welcome. I'm going to do two things tonight. The first is to celebrate being on my two legs, and even with witnesses watching me walk a little bit unsteadily towards this Hemingway's. And so I'm going to read in celebration of healing and that terrible buzzword at the moment, but I really do feel it. And I noticed that so many of our poems really are centered in the body and about the body. So I'm going to start with that, and then I'm going to follow up with some poems from the new book, I Want to Thank My Eyes. Now, the first poem is that poem, I Want to Thank My Eyes, and it is both in the book, and it's also a healing, or I think of it as a kind of healing poem. Okay. This too brings us back to the exercises that you were mentioning. It's so interesting, the reverberations of poets. Okay. I want to thank my eyes. You have been good to me all my life, all those times they wanted you to behave at the Columbia University clinic and dance those soldiers into guardhouses. You behaved in Greece when I stationed you on a crack between two buildings in the sky. You didn't move until the man and his goat negotiated the hill, and you verified the message to my brain. These were no ordinary specks. And you were brilliant in Jerusalem when you took in Manger Street and then in Dachau. Through an opening in a cave, you found me one unexpected flower, since I was foolish and came empty-handed to the endless graves of children. And I thank you for those things you managed not to see, those like what was happening beneath the fingers of the lovers in the park, and the terrible shaking of that man in the old horn and hearted. And I thank you for those things you managed not to see. I can only argue with the doctors in this Mercy Hospital then, who want to rearrange the water lily world I would prefer to live in, if I could. Those places that go on and on like those huge gardens of Monet. I tell them about that gaze of Robert Duncan. Nobody believed, even looked anyone straight in the eye either. He was wild or a lot crazy and mystical. And I remember when John Cage said, "You have eyes just like his." Okay, and this one addresses the broken bone. The wisdom of healing, a light now, the therapist says, walk, toes touching, step like you're stepping on a little baby's hand. There has to be a kind of mourning for your leg, he tells me, like that Japanese TV dog for his mate after the quake. Now delicate in your house, watch the morning light for a while. Let someone wash you with Spanish Maya soap. Let another stranger find your only bathrobe. And like the Japanese, don't say thank you, because once you learn the bittersweet, that message that goes when all is said or pronounced on this earth, then you never have to say thank you or do a thing again. You don't have to be the eternal thanker. You don't have to be the eternal thanker. You don't have to untie every elephant lingering in your lifetime of dreams. Enough to just leave a fingerprint, he tells me, or else kiss a leaf. Devote yourself to a fibula healing goddess. Enough. Ode to bags under your eyes. Where have you come from so early in my life? I have sported you forever, oh bags under the eyes, and I forgive your intrusion. Genetic? No. Sweetness? No. But like the Merrimacks or Montagnards, the mountain people, I believe you are containers for the young, like the sacks of my knees or my neck, my other pouches or bellies, your other relatives. I want to stuff you with red or blue flowers, let you have roses blooming beneath these eyes, and on knees I'll paint wacky 50s faces we will address as Honorable Sage 1 and Sage 2. They can water all the flowers of this body, my good cherubs of the under chin, cheering. This was part of a collaborative piece that was performed by a dance company. It's called Ode to Promise. And the first line of this poem is, the body is gift wrapped. And it was misspelled on a program and it came out, the body is gift warp. Well, I'm not reading the gift warp poem that I wrote after that. That was a prompt. Doesn't that happen? It happens all the time. Ode to Promise. The body is gift wrap. Stalk and green, full of promise, starting someplace we can never see. No one knows if a merciful life comes from you, O seed, with your leaf push of mercy. No one knows. No one knows why cuts heal. This is the last class on reading a footnote that went this way. Native Americans believe that anything that's made out of something that was living can still speak. We found that interesting. I am wondering what my hush students think when they read a little poem spoken by a canoe for their 8 o'clock class this Thursday morning. Stuck in between listening to a voice, closed forms, and unusual sonnets, this birch bark doesn't go away. Oh, canoe, I love you. Pray for me now in my hour of Choctaw need. I will not ask any more how long I have to testify on behalf of the sonata and its tender way with the living. I know a woman lovely in her bones says one thing to them about managing certain kinds of pain. And a girl in the front row tells the latest on prayer. If you are having surgery, you can ask now for a small group to pray when they roll you into an operating room. Of course, I tell them, sign up for that. Melody reaching for the spheres. Never mind what it means. I just heard about a doctor who took a priest home after his operation and had him dancing through the pine flats in no time. And they had never met before. But why do I want to tell this story? Maybe 10 years from now, everyone in 101 Leonard Hall will get it. Their stories, that's what I want for them. Of course, oh, canoe, I do love you so. In this hour of Choctaw need, please pray for us. Pray for us now. Not louder. Come closer. After not speaking for days and days, the voice comes out a brilliant little square to remind you of the geometry of sound. And you go no louder, no matter how you try, with your small man voice. And I'm trying not to watch you, friend, reading about desert fathers and the many holy ways we recognize absence. Death, the cedar waxwing buried in the tree by a door. Death, the province of every person who negotiates laughter. Borges, at the end, tells us in a line of a small poem, there are books in my library I know I'll never open again. And it saddens me. And I recognize it saddens me as I conjure up his photograph with those eyes too large for anyone's intelligent face. And since he was blind by then, once upon a time seeing, like Matisse or Cezanne, what I want to say is not change your life, but remake with some dignity the endless stubborn corners. Count those nameless flowers that open beneath you with some sense of their finale before they hear budding. And a small poem as a little testament to an Alzheimer's patient who was my aunt. This morning, Cousin Rosina puts her mother on the phone so I can tell how she is. That's the title. Aunt Esther just asked if I have a sister. What's her name? Isn't she my niece? I tell her, Vicky, Vicky. She asks if she's beautiful, beautiful. And did she leave her house in the Bronx? The Bronx? And finally, for this little piece of this reading, a little testament to my first masseuse. who was someone who worked in the basement of Maxon Towers in Squirrel Hill. She's not there anymore. My mystical masseuse. Barbara cut my nose last week with her 84-year-old fingers during the brain treatment after she worked on little Sylvie at the next table, pulling toes and fingers. She hits us all hard. In the basement of this high rise, Barbara does her pummeling. I want to bring her home baked bread, but she made it plain. I don't stop when I work. I only drink juice. All day long, I drink lots of juice, and I never tell everyone everything. Last week, I thought I won't go back when her letter came in the mall, in the mail, with the picture of the great I Am, who might be walking in Rome now and who let Napoleon go only so far. She doesn't hear well and shouts when she stoops over me. She talks about how the good will be saved and how the evil dark of the world, how the evil dark of the world will become a lake. Okay. Thank you. And now into the book to come, I want to thank my eyes. I'll just close with two selections from there which have been requested. All right. The first is a poem that was written after Bruno Bettelheim came to our campus, and some of you may not know who that was, but he's the first person to have really described autism, but he didn't call it that, and he set up schools and communities where these children could live together. And he did, he was quite a remarkable psychiatrist and psychologist who was analyzed by Freud. And this is called The Right Moment, remembering Bruno Bettelheim. And he told this story when he came there. So people were really experimenting with a lot of different kinds of therapies, some of which lasted only three or four times, and out the door you were. They still are practicing a lot of that. Okay. How to introduce the plastic bag to think of your head, any head, like a brilliant cauliflower gone under your own beads of water. The irony of the old warnings, keep plastic bags away from infants. But you died this way, more than a statistic that brings up the number of suicide survivors. What to say for an 85-year-old, your life stowed away in this thin bag? I'm trying to hear one little girl, one of those whose mother led her in. No one will say if she was a headbanger. She has no speech, or at least not a voice. I was the same age. I had a yellow purse. I wouldn't let anyone use my pencils, tie my shoes. In India, she would have been a goddess, carried around on a chair. A child with visions, and in North Dakota, the tribes would venerate her. But in this home for sick boys and girls, her voice rests in her chest like a rock egg, and no one could coax it out but you. Tough, they said you were tough, the tenderness, no tenderness except toward children. You would never talk about the camps. No one knows. Eleanor Roosevelt helped to get you out of Germany. Why you railed against anyone leaving presents in your room. In your long life of writing and arguing the case for victims asserting themselves, perhaps the child had a chance to say, thank you for standing 8 hours in a corner with me until I made a sound. And the very last one, which I'd like to dedicate to Joan, who seems to really like this poem. It's called Locker Room Thief, which is what I was once. Locker Room Thief Apology. I knew it was nervy when I packed my plum knapsack with my $6 bathing suit bought at Ann's going out of business and the tiny towel borrowed from my hostess. How I love the idea of gift. And in the pool, feeling the knob of my back, I knew I had to have something else, even if I had to take it. In the open locker next to mine was a whole story, gray shoes, a cap, a scarf, and a towel standing high with two red stains like thumbprints made by children with cherry tomatoes. And I imagined from the walnut shampoo and green striped suit who you were, that you wouldn't mind me covering up in your towel for protection from the gaping eyes of a child in the shower room, this body newly gone flapjack. I thank you for your towel deposited in a third locker near you in case I need it again. Thank you. When I go home, you'll get it back. It will just need a good washing. Thank you.